What's up, everybody? Welcome to We Have Cool Friends, the cool show. We interview our cool friends about their cool things they're doing. I'm Greg Miller, and this is a very special episode of We Have Cool Friends, ladies and gentlemen. Last week, or actually now by the time you're seeing this, I guess 2 weeks ago, the IGDA Foundation held a fundraiser called Play It Forward, where they were raising money to help the IGDA's efforts to make sure that game development and games are more inclusive and more welcoming to minorities of all kinds. And so during Play It Forward, they did this giant live stream. They had all these people on. They had all these different panels and games and stuff like that. And they asked me to come in and host a panel about allyship, something I think that's been on the tip of, I know, our tongues here at Kind of Funny, definitely in the Kind of Funny Best Friends community, of how to better support each other. And really open our eyes to what's going on for the perspectives we don't get to see, because of course I am a dumb white guy. And so that was really important to me to go and do. And after the panel was done, I thought, this is so good. This needs to go up. This needs to be heard by more people. So I asked the IGDA if we could put it up, the foundation, of course. Let me give you the quick rundown, too, if you don't know. IGDA Foundation has helped upwards of 800 diverse developers and creators achieve game industry ambitions. The IGDA Foundation believes that every person on the planet should love playing games, and the best way to make that happen is to have a game development community that is representative of and welcoming and inclusive to every person who wants to make games. So this allyship panel covers a wide range of topics, a whole bunch of things beyond just even race. I introduced the panel and they introduced themselves, but a heads up that everybody you're about to hear from goes like this. Elaine Gomez, co-founder of Latinx in Gaming. Steven Spawn, you've heard of him, COO of Able Gamers Charity. Sinead Bryant from is Crystal Dynamics. She's a senior producer over there. Elise Willems, who I think works at something like called Funhouse, I'm not sure. And then our brother from another mother, Khalif Adams from Spawn on Me. It's a great panel. It's a great discussion. Wanted to get it in here, but of course I wanted to do the normal housekeeping stuff, ladies and gentlemen. This is We Have Cool Friends. If you didn't know, it's our weekly interview show where we have all sorts of different people on to come on and share their perspectives, and that's what it's all about. This, of course, as I said, aired somewhere else, but you can get this usually live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can, of course, catch it later, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. It's on podcast services around the globe. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to get the show, get your name read on it, get it ad-free, have a good time, and hang out that way. You could even be like our Patreon producer, Mohammed, a.k.a. Momo, who supported us over there to get his name read. Today, we are brought to you by MeUndies, but I will tell you about that later. For now, please enjoy this panel, The Future of Allyship, What Does It Mean for Games? All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to your next panel here for Play It Forward as part of the IGDA Foundation fundraiser. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm one of your panelists. I guess I'm more the moderator because I have nothing really of value out of this because I'm Greg Miller. And if you didn't know, I'm a 37-year-old white male on the internet. So things are pretty good for me. And as we've known for a long time, but 2020 has been quick to point out, that is not the case for a lot of our friends. So for me personally, this year has been about being an ally and figuring out really what that means and what we can do. And this panel you're about to watch, hopefully if you didn't click off already, is all about that. How we can all be better to each other and support each other and make sure everybody's treated as equals. And so I want to go down the line to introduce our panelists here. We're going to start with you, Khalif. Who are you and what does allyship mean to you?
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well. I am Khalif Adams of the Spawn of Me podcast. Allyship to me is seeing something and saying something, is being able to see when things are not in good spaces and using your voice to kind of counteract that and for good. So that's my version of allyship for sure.
Thank you. And of course, thank you for spending the big bucks to make this happen. I see you're right above me there, your Spawn on Me logo. So obviously you're one of the chief founders. Sinead, who are you and what does allyship mean to you?
Hey everyone, I'm Sinead Bryant. I'm a senior producer. I've been in the game industry for almost 18 years, actually. Produce a lot of games that you guys might know. Devil May Cry, Resident Evil, The Outer Worlds, most recently with the guys over at Obsidian. And I also write and draw a comic called Terrible Allies. And it talks about allyship and the ways in which it's terrible. What allyship is to me is it's what we need in order to actually get there, right? Okay. I mean, obviously, oftentimes when we think about racism, sexism, those sorts of things, we think of it like racism is a black people's problem. Sexism is a women's problem. Well, it's not really that, right? It's really starting to understand the lived experiences of folks who live in this country, who live in this, who work in this industry, and understand what our experiences are, and then figure out ways in which we can really break down systems with systems that create this with systemic solutions.
Gotcha. Steven, who are you, and what does allyship mean to you?
You know, who I am is a question that I think we're all trying to work out, Greg, existentially. my name is Steve Spahn. I am the Chief Operating Officer of Able Gamers, the charity that helps people with disabilities live a greater quality of life through video games. You've probably heard of Able Gamers around the block, and you've probably seen me on Twitter screaming about something that people were doing wrong in allyship. And allyship to me is just a matter of figuring out when you should either amplify the voice of someone else who is in the situation so that they can be heard, especially if their voice doesn't have a big platform, or when you need to stand in front of someone else as a shield because someone is trying to attack, and when in the appropriate time to just not say anything whatsoever and let other people talk. That's what allyship is to me.
Good answer. Elaine, who are you, and what's allyship to you?
Hello. Hi, my name's Elaine. I am a game designer by profession at a studio called Elaine Media, but I am one of the co-founders of Latinx in Gaming. So we're an org. We're a little bit different than a lot of D&I orgs in the States, because we go a bit international, because our community is in the Caribbean, Central America, and South America, and also in the United States. For us, allyship is a multifaceted thing, because we're Latinos. It's not necessarily a race, it's an ethnicity, right? And we are a huge blend of all races, thanks to colonialism and imperialism and all those things that we are definitely working through in our identities in the modern age. But being an allyship for us is support and understanding, being able to know that we are not just one type of people. We're many, and we are under the banner of unity, and because that's part of our culture, being united, being a family, being a community. And allyship is understanding all those intricacies of being Latinx and being from different countries, having different languages, because it's not just Spanish speaking, it's also Portuguese speaking, as people who speak indigenous dialects. So it's a very complex, multi-layered identity. And being an ally is understanding all of those multifacets and being supportive of that, and understanding that there's no right way. There's no such thing as you are Latinx enough. It's if that's how you identify as, we support you. And even if it's your 1/8 Latinx or not, you're Spanish speaking or not, is understanding that if somebody identifies as Latinx, that you can support and uplift them in whatever way and shape they need.
And then, well, first off, for everybody watching, I want you to know, for everybody not watching, I guess, for you here right now in the chat, I told you earlier, I got it nailed. I set this up so perfectly. I'm so proud of myself. In the middle of your ending there, Elaine, a little thing popped up, and it was my Slack popping up. And yes, we have a Slack channel called Horse Legs. We're not going to talk about it, all right? That's a private thing. It's closed now. Don't worry about it. Elise, who are you, and what's allyship to you?
Hi, my name's Elise Willems, and I'm a producer at Rooster Teeth and Funhouse. And allyship has a duality to me. One is a woman. I'm you know, still figuring out ways that I can ask for it and feel comfortable doing so, and you know, find my own footing in that regard. But then as a white person, it's something where I'm still learning how I can inversely pass that on and do that in a respectful way that amplifies and supports and listens and knows when it's not my time to talk or centered around myself. And which I really intended to give the floor to today in a respect. So, yeah.
Of course. I think, obviously, as a moderator here, I think that's one of the reasons they brought me in, right? Because I get to have a platform and talk to a lot of people. And obviously, I've been passionate about this for a long time, but obviously need to learn things each and every day. And so that's where I want to start with you, Khalif Adams, Spawn on me. You put up a awesome video the other day, and it was actually before I knew you were going to be on this panel, and this panel might have even still been gestating, but it basically was, you put up a tweet that was like, allyship comes in many forms, and it was you quote tweeting a video of a white man, I think he was in Mississippi or was it Arkansas, I can't remember, It was the deep south. He's in Arkansas, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And he walked out to and had a Black Lives Matter sign and stood out by himself. And your video was all these different white people driving up to him and screaming at him, right? And all lives matter. And all the rhetoric and horrible things you hear said. You said that, you know, allyship comes in many forms. This is a personal question for me because you know me so well and we worked together so many times. What do you see me get wrong? What don't I understand? I think that's learning, you know, from your mistakes is the biggest thing and trying to apply that to a wider audience. Like, what don't I get?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think, and I'll back it out some years, right?
Please.
Where there were some years prior when I thought, I was like, Greg and Kind of Funny as a unit have an opportunity to use their voices in a way that is stronger and kind of more vocal and be in a space where you can use that platform to inform and to do some of that work. And in the beginnings of Kind of Funny and some of the work that you were doing, I didn't see that kind of full-throatedness be there. And in the past couple of years, I've especially seen you step out of that space to do that work in a way that feels more beneficial to folks who are in the spaces that I and other folks occupy. And I think when you ask the question of like, what do you get wrong? I don't know if it's necessarily getting a thing wrong. It's just a matter of like seeing you learn how to use that power that you do wield for good in good spaces. And I think to me, that's what actually matters. I don't have an expectation for you or any of my other white allies to get things right all the time. I don't have that expectation. I do have an expectation for all of you to do the work.
Sure.
And I think that that's the part that when I come back to, that's not the answer to that's not the question. It's like, what am I doing wrong? I'll tell you when you do it wrong and I'll shoot you up. I'll hit you over the text. I'll be like, yo, fam, you missed it on that one. Or you'll hit me up and be like, hey, am I getting this right? Like, before I send this thing out, like, is, you know, can I get in a set of eyes on that? And that you're doing something that 99% of people don't do. Is like, you know, and that's because we have a relationship. There can't be an expectation for everyone to do that work with the Black person they have in their lives. But because we have that relationship, I trust that I understand that you are trying. And to me, that is the thing that makes the most, that has the most impact for me, is if you continue to try, you continue to do that self-reflection and say, am I getting this wrong? Am I hitting this from a wrong angle? And how can I be better about that? That to me is, again, allyship and doing the work. I don't have an expectation for you to be perfect. I have an expectation for you to try.
Shanae, is it wrong for me to ask you, why is allyship so hard? Do you think it's hard? Do you think people miss the mark too often?
It is hard. I mean, all this stuff hard. I mean, when we're talking about things that are dealing with people's identity, like, this is not just something I enjoy or something I like. This is like who I am. So it's something that's deeply personal. And I don't make any kind of, illusions that this stuff isn't hard. Like, I've talked to people before and they look at me and they say, well, you're a Black woman. You've got it easy, right? You know, you must have been dealing with this stuff all your life. I'm like, yeah. I've been dealing with this all my life. That means I might have a better fluency in it. But make no mistake, like, there's still a learning process. I like to refer to it as, I say, everyone is sort of at a different place along their journey, right? And that includes people who both identify as allies, which we can talk about identifying as an ally as well. There's some things problematic within that sentence, but also people who don't identify as allies, right? Like, they might be at level zero kind of thing. And I've worked with a lot of groups. Like, I worked with the folks at Gaming for Everyone, WEX Champions, like, just various groups talking about diversity, inclusion, and equity, and all those sort of big words. And, you know, I always try and reassure people, I'm like, don't be afraid that you're going to make a mistake. You are going to make a mistake. Like, it is guaranteed you will make a mistake. As a cisgendered Black woman, like, I've made mistakes when I talk about LGBTQIA issues. I've made mistakes when I talk about disabled people's issues. Like, it is not about being perfect. But it is about, I think what Khalif said was, knowing when you need to shut up, knowing when you need to take a step back, listen and learn. One of the things that I find that allies make, if we're talking mistakes my allies make, one of the most common mistakes they make is going into a space and taking up all of the air in that space. And they're just like, wait a second, I learned a new thing. Let me tell you about this word called intersectionality. I learned this today. And Shanae, did you know that your experience as a Black woman is also, as a Black person, is also impacted by you being a woman? Did you know that? I'm like, yes, I did know that. Thank you. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, I've lived this.
Telling that a little bit, right? So yeah, this stuff is really hard, you know? But that doesn't mean that the work isn't important. And it is work. Like, it's work for everyone involved, whether you are a Black woman or a white man and you were involved in this very hard work, it is work. It is often unpaid labor, which can oftentimes make it really harder. The difference is for allies, it's in some ways a choice. You can pick up and go home if you want to. I've oftentimes heard, you know, folks when it gets hard, they're like, well, if you correct me in public, fine, you know, I'm your ally, I'll just go home. I'm like, oh, cool, you're going to join the side of racism again. Awesome. Great. I don't get that choice. For me, it's not only a way of like bettering my community and bettering my industry and society and as a whole, but it's also survival for me, right? I can't just ignore the fact that I'm a woman. I can't ignore the fact that I am Black. And everyone around me can't ignore that fact either, regardless of how people talk about colorblindness and that. Like, that's not a thing in the scope of racial relations. And it's also not a thing that actually impacts it in a positive way.
Steve, talk about it from your perspective, because again, you know, I asked Ka, what have I done wrong? He's like, oh, what did I get wrong? I got it wrong recently, right, with you, right, where you texted me privately after Kinda Funny put up a statement that was, hey, real quick, like, people for some reason have missed the point that if you're a fucking racist, we don't want you. We don't want you to. We don't want bigots. We don't want people that are like this. We don't want people who are jerks, right? And we listed out all, you know, trying to be as inclusive as possible, but we skipped mentioning disabled gamers. Steven, do you feel that in the current 2020 climate, where it is about race so much and it is about gender so much, that people are not thinking of you, that it doesn't apply to you?
It is a very tricky topic, because it's a little bit of internal pain in the allyship community at large, as we are all trying to be good for each other. A lot of the biggest things that you'll see from people who are very good allies will say things like, hey, make sure that you're watching out for Black people, for people of color, for LGBT, for trans. And they will list off all of the people that we should be looking out for and then completely ignore disability. It doesn't come up in the statement. It doesn't come up in any of their discourse, because it's both a problem of being ignored and also not thought about at the same time. There are people who willfully do not want to think about, deal with, look at, see people with disabilities. It makes them uncomfortable. Mm. It makes them think about their mortality. It makes them think about how human they are. Some people are just uncomfortable with it in general. And that's hard to be ignored. Some of it's just not realizing that all of the groups that I just listed have a disabled community amongst them. There are Black disabled people. There are Black women who are disabled. There are trans people who are disabled. And, you know, but I could say the same thing about any group of people. Like, we all should be interlinked in this fight together. And I think it's hard because we, you know, we're all trying the best we can, right? So I am a cis male gendered person who is, you know, literally all the things. I am white, I am male, I am straight, and I have all those privileges, but I'm also disabled, which also gives me a big barrier to get over. So, you know, I try to walk that line of, you know, where here's where my privilege helps and I've gotten a voice, and here's where I can pull other people up with me, and I can, you know, help, you know, women in gaming. I can help Black people in gaming, Latinos. And I try to do that the best I can. But you know, as my excellent panel mates have said, I'm sure I've messed up multiple times. I think we all need to have room to grow and be better people, you know. And really, if you get feedback that you don't necessarily cognitively like, recognize that cognitive dissonance is a thing. We're gonna automatically be like, oh, that's not me, I'm not racist, it's because I have Black friends, but it's fine. I'm not an ableist because my friend Steve, I know him, it's fine, I'm fine with the disability community. And but that's not necessarily true. Maybe you misstepped, maybe you need to rethink it. Unless something you did is like abhorrently bad, you know, like any of the streamer drama we could talk about, you know, unless it's something you willfully did on purpose, just take it as you misstepped. It's not the end of the world. I've Personally, people ask me, how do I get my success in reaching out to celebrities? And Greg is a great example. Somebody makes a misstep, reach out to them. Say, hey, you messed up. Here's where you could have done better. I hope you do better in the future. Leave it at that. If they're a good person, they'll come around and be like, oh, crap, I'm sorry. I can do better. And if they're a bad person, they'll be like, ah, get away from me, newbie. Nobody cares. So, yeah, leave it up to them.
Elaine, how hard is it to find that balance?
Sorry.
No, you're fine. You're allowed to cough. Don't apologize for that. You're allowed to cough in this podcast. Don't you worry about it at all.
I'm so sorry.
No. How hard is it for you to find that balance of trying to find allies and educate them? But it's such a hard concept, because I know I've been on the other side of the conversation where somebody has come to me, and this is, you know, in college, of like, oh, you shouldn't say this or do this, and I bristle of like, well, no, it's a joke. What are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. And then you push away from them. And for me, it took a long time and a lot of relationships and a lot of people to bring you around and make you understand that. For you, as somebody who's trying to find allies and also, you know, make a safe space, obviously, for your people, what is that like trying to have those conversations with people?
Oh man, it's super, super hard, especially with like the current climate in the world, in our society. And I always tell people, I always treat people, regardless of who they are, as if they were like a family member, because we all have that family member who's completely against something that it just doesn't make sense. You know, why they would have that stance, and their family. And there's that conversation too of like, even if somebody is your family in their blood, like, do you have to put up with it? There's also that conversation. But I think just as a society, as humankind, we have failed at being able to grow from failure and being able to grow from being misunderstood or being wrong. And like, being wrong all of a sudden is this thing where we have to put up a wall, we have to be defensive, and we have to distance ourselves from people instead of recognizing and internalizing those things that we did wrong and actually using it as a positive to do better next time. And I think that when we come at it that way, when we are open in any topic and with any situation, when we're open to learning something new and understanding that maybe I won't get it right, but I'm willing to take the L and have somebody call me out and be able to grow from that. One of the things that I've been learning a lot being in the Latinx space in the United States is that I have to be careful that I am very inclusive of, I'm very conscious recently of people who don't speak Spanish. To me, that's a big one. And it's like a Mexican Americans or any type of Latin American identifying American who was born and raised here, whose family just brought them not to speak Spanish because they wanted them to fit in and they didn't want them to suffer, you know. And as a person who was not born in the United States and whose native tongue is Spanish, I didn't understand that. I was like, well, how can your parents not want you to learn Spanish? Like, that's your culture. And I didn't understand the behind the scenes, the reasons why. And I think that's important to understand too when it comes to being an ally and understanding what other people's life experiences are, is that there's always a behind the scenes. There's always a reason why somebody feels a certain way, that somebody may feel something is hurtful, and we have to be very cognizant of all those behind the scenes and also the facts, which are as easy as going to Wikipedia, going to Google, and doing a little bit of research on our end and understanding, well, what's going on in the space right now in the modern era, and hey, what happened 50 years ago or 100 years ago that has become like the foundation of the perpetuation of those negative cycles, those negative thoughts, and things that we can break, right? Because yeah. I think that we all have the ability to break those cycles just by being open to grow and loving each other, right? And that's one of the things that I have learned so much in the past month or two, is like loving people even when they hurt me, even when they say hurtful things, because that's when people really step back and you're like, you know what, have a blessed day. I don't care what you call me, have a blessed day. And people like stop. Like, I had a really ugly argument with somebody on Twitter, and as soon as I was like, you know what, we don't see eye to eye, I still respect you and I hope you have a great day, they stopped immediately. Like, there was nothing else that they could pick off of, because they understood that it wasn't getting to me anymore, you know. But it's all growing pains as a society. It really is, and we're watching it unfold in real time all over the world.
Now, Elise, how dare you come to this panel? All right, you're
Greg, I'm a woman.
No, all right, all right. No, you're driving to my point. You got to the joke before I did. That's why we work so well together. No, so talk to me about your experience, because as you said at the top, right? Like you're this duality where, of course, yeah, you're white, so you have to deal with so much of the racism stuff. But yeah, you're a woman, and I think on top of that, if people don't know and are seeing you and have missed it, like you're Funhouse, like you're the YouTube channel Funhouse. You're incredibly successful, incredibly popular. Like you know, you guys pop up. You were in the PC. Yeah, don't do this. You were in the PC gaming show and all that jazz, and everybody knows you and loves you around the world. Even at the top of that mountain, because I think that's something people see so much, is that they're out there and they're, you know, they're doing the 9 to 5, then they come home and they bust their ass on a Twitch channel or a podcast, and then they go into the comments or they look at the chat and there's horrible things said about them. Even at the top, is that something you still have to deal with?
Oh, it affects me every day, seeing that kind of like vitriol, and especially when it's targeted from a perspective of gender. It's even worse because it's not even a fan. I often said over the years, I wish I was criticized more because of the quality of my character. being targeted because of my gender, because then at least I could say like, okay, well, I guess I'm just a garbage person and roll on with that. It's something where, you know, not only sometimes will I, you know, delete comments that I think are rude towards me, I do it in a sheltering way toward other people. Or I'll see a comment and I think I need to delete this before, you know, X person sees it, because I don't want them to see this horrible thing. You know, and you do try to get a thicker skin about it. I definitely don't have to deal with also the like Shayna was saying, the intersectional aspect of it, where it's like I'm being targeted for two things.
Yeah.
You know, because that I can imagine is an even worse experience. That being said, you know, one of the most hurtful things that I'll always draw back to is I've had people in my personal life say, you know, well, I'm not a feminist. I support women, but I'm not a feminist. And my perspective is always, well, I think, you know, if you actually looked up the definition of what feminism is and what it purports to champion, you would very much say that you are. Mm-hmm. Because everyone. Who just believes in women being, you know, equal and having a just voice, like you are a feminist. And I know that there's, you know, there are different tenets of feminism, radical feminism that kind of seeks to destroy and deconstruct that. But I do think that's why these conversations are important, because
sure,
you know, no one's looking at the multifaceted aspect of it.
I want to obviously open up and let you guys talk to each other, but I have one question before we do that. Shanae, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned basically the whole toxic ally, but we'll get that's a whole different thing, right? Like people who are doing ally the wrong way. What does that mean? Because that scares me. I don't want to be a toxic. I don't want to be a bad guy.
I'm always really hesitant to tell people that they're doing ally the wrong way, right? Like, because that's a very broad way of saying it. What I want to do, you know, I think one of the themes that we've been talking about today is listening and learning. Like, you know, I've been a member and been a part of like various work groups that tried to tackle this whole idea of diversity and inclusion. You know, some of them take a stance where it's like, okay, well, you know, we want to create a space that feels safe where people can come in and they can learn, they can ask questions and they can educate themselves and like find the places where they have blind spots and find places where they need to shore stuff up and then go out. And like, it's not a once a week thing. It's like, it has to become part of your life. It has to be something that you actually prioritize and care about. I describe it as like, if you wanted to learn Spanish, you wouldn't just find the first Spanish speaking person you could find and be like, yo, speak Spanish at me and I'll get it eventually. Like, yeah, just keep talking. I'm getting it. It's like, no, you wouldn't do that. You'd buy books. You would go to classes. You would basically inundate yourself with it if it was important to you. It's the same thing here. Like, we're not only learning something new, like as a culture, and especially as folks who've grown up within a patriarchy, within a white supremacist society, which America is both, but you're unlearning a lot of things, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go
So I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say, for me, I might be someone who thought I knew Spanish, but now I'm kind of looking at it again, saying maybe I didn't. Maybe I was not speaking Spanish.
or like, you know, you might know like entry level Spanish, but you're like, nope, I'm going to the 4,000 level class right now because I think that I, you know, they can deal with me, right? Yeah. And it's like, no, like listen, like this is it is a hard journey. Like we talked about it being hard work and stuff like that before, but when I was talking about I didn't say toxic allyship, but terrible allyship. But toxic allyship is also a thing. And I'll talk a little bit about terrible allies. So my comic Terrible Allies came from, it's basically semi-autobiographical, came from being a Black woman living in Seattle and very white spaces on the West Coast, very white liberal spaces for over four years in Seattle, almost like 7 years, I think, in San Francisco. And it was, you know, it was a little bit of catharsis, but it was also just like seeing like a lot of the same patterns emerge, and especially within folks who describe themselves as allies, but keep making those same kind of mistakes. Like we talk about microaggressions, right? Like I'm sure everyone on this panel has experienced a microaggression. For me, it's often people talking about my hair or trying to touch my hair, which is just, why is this a thing that occurs? I've had that happen on the street. At a tea house, at work, like people just walking up and being like, I love your hair, let me just touch it. And these are, and it's not like someone thinks about it as a malicious thing. They're not like coming at you with like, oh, intent, oh, a Black person, let me just like see what's it feel like. Is it wired? You know? But no, it's hair. It's really boring, actually. Mine's just curlier. So yeah, it's like the thing I try and get people to do is divorce intent from what happens, right? If someone says, you know, something hurtful to me, they might have intended to hurt me, but it still has the same effect, you know? It still has the same effect as someone who actually intended to hurt me. So divorcing intent from that, I think, is really important. And I think it's also something that's really hard for allies, especially new allies, to really do, because they say, well, I'm coming into this, like, I'm trying to be an ally. I'm really trying to do what's right. I'm really trying to do this. And then, you know, I told Khalif this thing, and he just, like, and he snapped at me, and he, like, and then Steve like sent me a text message, and I, why do I even try, you know?
And, well, this is what happens when you try to touch my hair.
You know, I'm just saying, like, don't make it hurt. the way I like to just summarize it down, instead of people calling themselves allies, because I think that's where we really get into a space that stops people from learning. I say allyship is a direction, not a destination. Hmm. You are always going to be continuously trying to teach yourself, trying to learn new things. Like as we continue throughout the years, like we're learning new things about ourselves. You know, there are words for things to describe our identities and our experiences that did not exist 5 years ago. And that's actually a great and wonderful thing because it describes what the human experience is. But that means as people are learning about themselves, allies, I always put in quotation marks, allies also need to learn. This is not a thing where you reach the mountaintop and cool, we're there. It's like, no, the mountain is way over there. And we're still marching towards it. So if people get that in their minds, that it's not only hard work, but it is long work and it is lifetime work. Like you don't just become an ally and then you're like, you're done. Well, cool. I figured out the Black thing. So I'm just, you know, I guess I'll get over to the woman thing eventually, you know? But no, it's a long-term commitment. You know, I think that's what's going to be really important towards for people really starting to like invest in this.
Would you mind if I talk about my thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, please. That's what this is all about. I just want to drink coffee and listen to you guys, so go for it.
Fantastic. All right. Trying to make Greg's life easier. That's what I'm all about.
It's about time, Steve.
Yeah. So I think, honestly, all those points are 100% what the disability community feels, and I think a lot of us feel, is the intent. It is everything, right? And I understand the phrase is, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That's true. But here's the thing. Curiosity shouldn't be penalized in society like it is. Let me give a great example of that from the disability side. If a small child, 6-7 years old, comes up to me and says, hey, what's wrong with you? Their mom or their dad will snatch them up faster than a $2 Kit Kat and run away. And I'm just like, no, don't do that. Like, let your kid ask the question because they want to know what's going on. Did they phrase it appropriately for a sensitive culture? No, they did not. You know, they should have said, excuse me, sir, what is the thing is that may be difficult for you? Yes, that's what they should have done, but they're six. They're not going to do that. They're going to say, what's wrong with you? So it's like, I understand why that reaction is to shy the kid away and be like, no, 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 don't say that. Don't say that, because they don't want to be embarrassed. But statistics have shown for disability and for some other situations where they're not used to being around people who are different than themselves, that, for example, if you are somebody who's okay with dating someone who has a disability, it's likely that you had a friend or an experience with someone who was disabled when you were a child. If you grow up and you are okay with working with someone with a disability, you can ask them. Most people had an experience with a disabled person when they were younger. That sort of curiosity, that introduction to not everybody looks like me, is something that I think we've kind of lost along the way.
Sure.
We've kind of lost that it's okay to wonder about someone.
Yep.
It's not okay, and this is a real story, it's not okay to walk up to me and ask if my penis works, the thing that actually happened to me. That's not okay. But it is okay to walk up to me and be like, hey, like, it's really cool the way you drive your wheelchair. How does that work? I'll be more than happy to tell you. I'll actually be like, hey, this person is interested. I'm happy to teach you. There's appropriate, there's curious, intent is everything.
I'll even bounce off of that point. And I think that one of the things we find the most difficult is doing all this work in social media spaces, which I find to be the hardest version of trying to figure out not only my own personal allyship, but how I, you know, work with other folks who are trying to get, you know, get to that mountain too. And it feels like that is the place where a lot of grace is not given. And it's because everyone is fairly terse. It's because folks kind of come into spaces often, not only with their own baggage, but also with the ability to do to throw that hand grenade in a room and then walk away and feel okay with what they shared or what they said and not know that there are repercussions behind that, not only from a public perspective, but also from a personal internal perspective of like, hey, I have thrown this grenade into a room that is like, you know, I saw you say a thing and you got it wrong, and let me tell you how you got it wrong in the most unhelpful way that you could possibly do that thing.
280 characters, and then, right? Let me boil down how you fucked this up in 280 characters in a public forum that immediately puts everyone on the defensive and has other people come in to start saying, yeah, you suck, or no, you're being a baby, and oh my God.
Yeah, and it makes me, again, like, it makes me personally think about those repercussions a lot, and it makes me way more cautious, not only in my personal allyship, my public allyship, but in the way that I just don't like the versions of the way that people talk to each other. It's just not conducive to getting people on your side, or if you're not even trying to get people on your side, to express the thing that you're hopefully trying to express in a way that actually does some good, which I think is a huge part of where we wind up finding ourselves in terms of how do we bridge those gaps that we wind up seeing, and how do you actually get people to feel like they can be curious, or they can ask the question that may not necessarily be worded or phrased in the right way, or in a way that feels like, you know, the nice parts of the culture will be able to take and digest in certain ways. So I think there's work to be done in that space too, not only from allies trying to do that work, but also from the folks who are aggrieved a little bit, to be able to say like, all right, I understand where you're trying to come from. You hit that wrong, but again, here's the ways that you could share that information, or the way you could ask that thing, or participate in the conversation. So, and there's space to work on both ends.
I want to take that for a second, yeah, because that's the big problem, I think, of this tightrope people trying to be allies walk, where it is this thing of, I try to give off the good vibes, and I try to support, and I try to amplify, and I try to bring on different guests and stuff. But then I have that moment where I get it wrong, or someone thinks I get it wrong, and I have that snap back, right, where it is all of a sudden they tell me, you know, your words are hollow because you didn't do this one thing. And I'm always – that struggle of like, wait, you liked me just enough to put me that one notch into the positive, and now one negative has put me back into the negative. Like –
Well, it's what you call it, though, right, Greg? It's and this is the thing I've seen, and again, I'll use myself as an example for this, because I try to do the right thing too, right? Like, yeah. I try to be that person who does that stuff too, and I feel like I do it fairly well, but I see it often where the amount of work that you do to get to a certain spot, right, and you feel like you're making those strides, the ability for the internet to take all that stuff away,
sure,
is weird, and it's not necessarily helpful. In that same way, again, I think if we're all looking at the framing of what this is, and Sinead perfectly framed this. It was like, this is a long journey. We are all learning at the same time in different ways at different angles. And I am learning stuff all the time that I'm just like, oh, that was terrible. I need to not do that.
Yep.
Or that was an angle I didn't even see before. Oh, that's amazing. Let me try to figure that out. But people feel that, you know, one, perfection is the goal, which it's not, and it never will be. And two, the idea that you are losing something by gaining other parts of the conversation, which is a huge part of the ecosystem too, which is just like, oh my goodness, what do you mean I have to have this black woman on the front of my game? All my white privilege is gone. I can't play this game anymore. Oh my God, how can I do this? Oh, there were two people having sex in Valhalla right now. Oh my God, it's two men. I can't believe this. My game is ruined. It's not ruined. And they were having sex in Viking times. Calm it down. Everybody understands this is history.
But it's a couple with someone saying they don't care about any of that stuff, but it needs to be a white guy in a heterosexual relationship.
Exactly.
Right. So again, it's a matter of we have to try to figure out better ways to show and showcase. So that was actually backwards. Showcase the things that are happening. But also give each other a little bit more grace to be able to get it wrong. Yeah, cause then people would have the ability to ask and be curious and do that work. So, yeah.
If I can jump off a little bit of what Colin said too, sorry, this is an interesting conversation. I love this topic right here. Cause I think that, you know, I look at it this way. We have lots of different tools in our toolkit, right? Like there's not a one size fits all response for all of these discussions. Sometimes, you know, if someone asks me a question, like I can approach it with grace. And sometimes I've been, you know, in the course of a week where you've been, you know, asked that same kind of question and dealt with these same kind of racism, sexism, all these sorts of things. Sometimes it's just like, I don't have the emotional currency to deal with another dumb question about whether or not black people tan, which is a question I've gotten multiple points in my life. Do black people tan? Answer, yes, we do. Human tan. Are black people human? Yes, we are. Yes, we tan. So I think it's a couple different things, right? Because, you know, like I said before, like when we're talking about these issues of you know, diversity and inclusion and identity, like these are things that are deeply personal. So I'm always hesitant to say that someone should always respond to it like in a certain way, because sometimes you just can't. And sometimes, you know, even if you do have the ability to, sometimes the person who you're responding to, like you need to find them the tool that gets through to them. You need to find the way to communicate with them that will get through to them. Like, I'll give you an example. Like back when I was at a very large company that I won't name that's up in the Seattle area, we were in a meeting. that was a diversity and inclusion meeting, right? And the conversation sort of went towards, there was this one white gentleman and he made the comments about how call out culture. He was like, I hate call out culture. You know, like someone's like trying to be an ally. And then, you know, you say the wrong thing in a room and then suddenly someone calls them out. And then that embarrasses you in front of your entire groups of colleagues. And everyone in the room's like, yeah, that's bad. And he says, what you should do is you should go to that person afterwards privately and talk with them. And that's the right way to deal with it. So you don't, because otherwise, you know, you're calling people out and they're going to run back down the rabbit hole. They're just going to abandon the whole cause. And I'm sitting in this room and I said, all right, so I know that you literally just said you don't want to be called out in front of your room of your colleagues, but I need to talk about what you just said. Because sometimes when someone calls you out, you feel like they're attacking you. It's not always for you. Like there's other people in this room who are also from those marginalized identities. If they hear that comment come through and pass and nobody says anything, that says that comment is acceptable in that space. So sometimes when you get corrected in a public space for when you said a thing in a public space, it's necessary not for your feelings, but for the feelings of everyone else who's in that room. And I know it can be uncomfortable. All of this stuff is uncomfortable. Like I always tell people, you have to get comfortable with your discomfort, which is absolutely like probably an oxymoron, like a thing that is almost impossible to do. Like having these conversations is always uncomfortable to some degree. But once you start to understand that it is going to be uncomfortable and that doesn't matter ultimately, that you have to still engage in it. You can't run from it just because you get a little bit, you know, shaky about something. And that sometimes like you will get, if you make a mistake publicly, you will get corrected publicly, and sometimes not in the nicest way. Like that's part of this process. Now, I admit that from Khalif, what he said, like sometimes like the our online online conversation stuff. Yeah, discourse is. I like how I couldn't think of the word discourse when we're on Discord right now. the online discourse. It's very polarized, right? And it's like when we're, especially when we're in online spaces, it sort of incentivizes people to be as snarky as possible, as rude as possible, to not even consider grace and not even consider another way that you might perceive or you might be able to address the situation because, I mean, that might not get you the likes, right? So like different communication methods do definitely sway us in different directions and influence the way in which we could approach a situation. But I always say like there's lots of different ways. It's not necessarily there are wrong ways to do this. But there's not a right way for every single person, every single situation, because there's so many things that could be going on in someone's life at any given time. Mm.
We interrupt this riveting panel to tell you about our sponsor. This episode of We Have Cool Friends is brought to you by MeUndies. MeUndies wants to talk about your underwear. Like, seriously, they have a lot of feelings about it and want to chat with anyone who will listen. So here goes. MeUndies just wants everyone to feel comfortable as heck with the freedom to express themselves. That's why they make the world's softest undies in classic colors and fun patterns like dinos and surfboards. Whatever you put on every day, they want you to be comfortable being yourself. I'm Greg Miller, and as you know, I only wear MeUndies because years ago now, I bought my first pair, and I was like, these are so amazing. I ordered more and then threw away the rest of my underwear, and ever since then, I've been wearing MeUndies. Today, I'm wearing the smiley faces, the yellow undies with the black smiley faces on it. MeUndies, of course, is serious about softness. So serious, they scoured the world for the softest fabric known to man. It all starts with sustainably sourced beechwood trees that magically turn from pulp to yarn to undies. Undies that kind of feel like heaven on your skin for comfort from the outside, literally, to in. Like I said, bunch of different patterns. They send them right to your door, so you don't have to go anywhere. Easy to find everything you want online. Easy returns, satisfaction guarantee, 100% satisfaction guarantee, and we have an offer for you. MeUndies has a great offer for you, my listener. Any first-time purchasers will get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because of the 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 15% off, your first order, free shipping, a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. Elaine, I want to get you involved here. It's been a particularly painful 2020, obviously, with COVID, Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement coming into games, everything else happening. And, you know, it's this weird thing where I think I'm speaking, obviously, from a place of white privilege and male privilege, right, of when this happens and the boat rocks, it's exactly what you guys are talking about, right, of like, oh, my God, this is horrible, and all I want to do is turn off everything and play a game and ignore it. And I'm like, well, wait, that's the exact opposite of what I need to do, right? I need to get off the bench. I need to be involved. I need to use my voice. I need to say that, no, I don't stand for this. I need to put out statements in that. Elaine and I, well, this is for the group, but I'm starting with you. Do you think that we've hit a turning point? Do you think this is better than it usually is in terms of discourse and people at large realizing this? Because I think even the call out cancel culture thing, right? While there's definitely times where that's, yes, that should happen. You said this and there's no way around that this is a abhorrent thing. There's the other times where I am seeing people have the, you know, these arguments that ratchet up and then do de-escalate. I'm like, listen, I was out of line. I shouldn't have said that. Me too. I apologize. I deleted that tweet. Is it getting better because we've had this moment as a society that we realize something is truly messed up at the core?
That's a really hard question. Thanks for giving it to me.
Hey, this is a really hard panel, all right? This is a very tough panel.
Oh, man. Has it gone better? I'm inclined to say that people are more aware, but it's not necessarily that it has all of a sudden gotten better. I think people are talking about it more and people are more open to learning. And people are getting out of their comfort zone. And I cannot speak to everybody and generalize,
of course,
but I have seen that in different circles. And when I mean different circles, I'm talking about in the Latinx community and like the families, like people's like inner circles. I'm seeing those changes in my personal life as well. People like willing to call out somebody they really respect and admire and love, like, that's hard to do.
Totally.
Like, it's so easy for me to call out a stranger that I don't know because I don't have any of that personal connection. I'm not emotionally attached. I can be like, hey, like, you said this wrong. You hurt my feelings. That's not okay. And I can move on with my life. But if it's somebody like my dad, who I have to sit down with and be like, Dad, this is why Black Lives Matter. This is why the news that the news channels that you're choosing to feed off of are not giving you the whole story. This is why it's important to grow and to research and to watch documentaries and to listen to music. There's so many forms of media that we can use to educate ourselves and also point people towards as resources. We don't have to have that burden of educating the whole world about what's going on with my community. Why should you be a better person, see things in a different way? We don't have to take that burden, right? Yeah. But I think that people are more open and more receptive to popping, turning on Netflix and watching a documentary about something that they don't understand. Has it gotten better? Well, is 2020 the year where the whole world just turns away from all negativity and all of a sudden we see like this shining beacon of light and hope and in the darkness? No, we're not going to all huddle around and sing Kumbaya together because it's not the right time. It's just not. There's still a lot of work to do. Even like within my community, the Latinx community, like just the word Latinx, you wouldn't believe the amount of pushback that we're getting just in Latinx identifying people about the word Latinx because they refuse to acknowledge pronouns. Spanish is a gendered language. She is she and him, or her and him. And it's so hard to be able to talk to somebody like my dad or my aunts and uncles and being like, the word Latinx is important because XYZ, without them having being closed-minded. So it's not just this is a year where people are opening their eyes. This is also about breaking generational perspectives and I guess traditional values. Sure. That's something, at least for me in my community, something that it's an uphill battle because, you know, and my parents dealt with their own things like back in when they were younger in the 80s and 90s, right? And now I'm seeing some of those same things that never really got resolved, plus more because of social media and technology and things that they just didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
So I think that although it's good to see people grow and it's good to see tweets from my friends being like, hey, I know I said this the other day, somebody corrected me, I'm sorry. And I'm going to use that as a learning experience. It's great to see that. And it helps me try to discern how I should communicate with people because I won't talk to my best friend in the same way that I will talk to my coworker about anything going on in the world right now, right?
Yeah.
So we also need to be careful about our word choices. But I do think that people are receptive to being a better person as long as we, again, like I said before, it's not about making that person feel bad and making that person move away from the cause, like Shanae has said, but it's really about using it as a growing experience. And when you take it that way, you keep that for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I will never forget some of these learning experiences that I've had the past couple of months because they have been growing experience and very positive experiences. I don't remember those instances. And again, like family stuff, because, you know, that's just my culture. Like instances where my parents have been very rough with me and trying to teach me something, I don't necessarily remember those things. I remember it more when we sat down and they're like, Elaine, why did you decide to do this? And can we help you to make better decisions later on in life? Because we don't want you to get hurt. Mm. Or we want you to become a strong woman, an independent woman. And those are the types of conversations, I think, that are most valuable to people. Is the ones where you sit down and you're genuine. You call out. But it's always about learning and growing together. And living in this space together because we're coexisting in this earth. So it's not just about me being in my Latinx bubble. It's about me infiltrating that Blacks in Gaming space and being there for them, listening to them. It's me about uplifting my Able Gamer friends as well when they have their streams and being present and not just for one day. It's throughout their career. It's and through their highs when they're getting those awards and when they're getting those recognitions, and it's through their lows when they are not on social media and they're dealing with some really tough stuff and sending them a text like, hey, how are you doing? How is your day? Is there anything that I can do? I'm here for you. Like, all those conversations are valuable. And I guess too, just to stop talking because I know I'm talking too much. Those conversations of allyship that don't happen on social media, we don't know about those and we're not privy about all those things. And I think that's something that we really need to be aware of as well. We don't know how people are growing outside of the 180 characters that we put on Twitter and the posts that we do write on Facebook, etc. So leave people at least who you can see are genuinely trying. Like, give them that little benefit of a doubt. You don't know if they last Saturday they sat down and watched 3 documentaries on Netflix and they didn't tell anybody. Yeah. You know, like what you do in private really comes out in the way that you speak. And then when you start posting the articles that you start sharing, like you will see that domino effect. And I see that as time moves forward, we will be able to tell who really took all this stuff that's going on to heart by the domino effects that they're leaving behind. And we'll be able to see that, I think, within the next year or so. So I'm more concerned not what's happening now and seeing if people are changing now, but what's going to happen a year from now. Because we've seen those posts like BLM is yesterday, today, and every day. That's forever, you know, and it's not just a month like social media extravaganza that people had with their little black squares and things like that, you know. So I'm hopeful, even though I am a bit of an optimist, but hopeful to see what happens next year. And if people are as conscious, if people are as caring and they're as empathetic towards people that are not like them.
Elaine, if I may, how dare you? All right. You said at the beginning, oh, this is a tough question. I don't know if I can. And then you just dominate the question with a perfect answer.
Get I out definitely of here. Had to think about a lot of that stuff, and remember too, like I'm sure everybody here can say the same thing that I have done a lot of internalizing the past couple of months with everything going on, and COVID helped a lot because I'm home and I'm not distracted by all these other things that I could be doing, like going on vacation and hanging out with my friends. Like it's definitely has been a double-edged sword, everything that's going on, because it really has helped you try to evaluate yourself and seeing like, am I actually doing what I want to do? And am I being where I really want to be? Am I portraying myself to be this person that I'm not? Is that really who I am? And try to like really nip it in the butt, because I don't want to, like, as soon as I realize that I'm not doing something that I see as good or positive, I try to correct myself immediately. And that is hard to do. And I've learned to do that because I've struggled a lot, you know, like a lot of growth comes from really awful things. And we could talk together about all the awful things that we have experienced in our lives. But I can really say that for me personally, I have been able to adjust so many things about me because of all those awful moments and those negative moments that I have used to propel myself. You know what I mean? Because it's what's the point? What's the point in living if you're just going to drag yourself through life? You know what I mean? At some point, it gets going to be like, you know what? These are glass relationships that I really want to make sure that they don't break. And I will do all that I can to keep them. But then these are other relationships that I don't care if they're glass and fall. Like, then not my problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Wow. You crushed that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. Believe it or not, our time's almost up. So what I want right now is we're going to go down the line. Everybody give a piece of homework, I guess. Like what you would encourage someone who wants to be a better ally to actually go out and do, like an action item, whether it be a documentary, whether it be a book, whether it be something actual actionable of you know, what you should tweet, what you should do, resources you should look at. Khalif, I'm tossing it to you to start.
Vote in November.
Ah, yeah, there we go. Great one.
Vote in November. Yeah. That's my one.
Okay. Shanae.
social media, follow Black people on social media, follow Black women on social media, follow people from marginalized identities on social media. It is amazing. Whenever I've reached out to my friends, when they see this call for action and they look and they're like, man, I only follow like you. I'm like, yes, I know. I'm many people's only Black friend. Follow more Black people. Follow more women. Follow more disabled people. Follow more folks from marginalized identities instead of just following white people who talk about their experiences.
Steve?
I would say expand your empathy. Understand that this world is very complex and we all have a lot of battles that we're fighting. Nobody knows anything about, just like Robin Williams said. We are all struggling to get through this world. And if we would look at it, that we're all in this battle together, maybe we have a particular thing that we care more about than the others, maybe because it's personal, maybe because it's family member, or it's you. Understand that everybody has a thing that they're fighting with and that they're struggling with. And if you can empathize with them, even if you can't understand it, at least make the attempt to empathize. That situation must be hard. Don't automatically say, I can't imagine. Just say, what would it be like? What would my life be like if I was in their shoes? Think about it. Try to walk yourself through it. And you'll find on the other side that not only will you end up making more friends than enemies, you'll also find that you're more of a caring person and you're trying to do your little part. And if we all did a little tiny part, this world would be a better place.
Elaine?
I would add to everything that everybody else said, voting and following more people, including more people of color and more diverse people in your life and your social media, having more empathy, but also like learning, right? I think that's, I said that like 10 million times today, but learning in the sense that you're going back and you're going through history and you're seeing where sources and problems are stemming from. And I think that would be the best way for you to understand the current climate and everything that's going on is by understanding where all these things come from, what are the sources, and evaluate that for yourself. Don't rely on other people's opinion pieces and news channels. Like, form your own educated opinion about what's going on and then talk to people who are living that experience so that they can give you the other perspective. Because you can always see that issues are always two-sided, sometimes even three-sided. So always try to understand things from different angles.
And finally, Elise.
Again, like everybody made super excellent points. I would add donating if you can. And that's not just always financial. Sometimes that's just donating your voice in a way that either amplifies or reaches out to someone in a regard. Steven really hit my point on the head in a much more eloquent way than I ever can. But to me, there's always a shortage of empathy. And empathy, I think, is best ingrained and starts at a very young age. So if you can, if you have that kind of downward influence, teach younger people empathy, teach younger people to be introspective and then also seek the perspective of others. And I think a lot of that too, because there are tons of great books and resources that you can find in nonfiction that teach allyship and encourage these different movements and tenets and of them. But also just like, and this is kind of a weird one, but like fiction, I think when you expose really young kids to different works of fiction that follow a different person's perspective, it's not, you know, it's not handing them a textbook and saying, here are the steps of allyship. It's just getting them to understand someone else's mindset and what they might go through. And that's like so vital and something that I think is lost. It's something that we do get in video games.
Yep.
So increasingly now. So, you know, and also seek out those games and encourage other people to play them, because that's what we're all into.
Yeah, for sure. That's funny. You here at the end of the panel, we haven't even talked about games this entire time. It's just, yeah, we're all in the gaming community. No, games are great at that. And some of my favorite games are those that open your eyes to a different perspective. And it was like, yeah. Oh, you get to literally walk a mile in someone's shoes.
Life is Strange 2 is one from last year that I just tell everybody if I can, like, please play it. It's so important right now.
Yeah. For me, it's Gone Home. I always push Gone Home on people.
Yeah, Gone Home.
Go experience this and what that would be like, since I have no, you know, knowledge of that. Well, thank you all for your time. You are amazing panelists. You know, one of the things that Elise said was donate if you can. Remember that this stream, Play It Forward, is all in the benefit of the IDGA Foundation. The IDGA Foundation has helped more than 800 young developers around the world achieve their game industry ambitions. Nearly 700 students and scholars have gone through its online program. Diversity is a cornerstone of the foundation, with upwards of 100 women, non-binary, transgender, and gendered queer creators having found their first job through the program. And it's just getting started. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have the means, it would mean a lot if you donated while you watch this stream. Think about it. If you can't, just go ahead and retweet it somewhere. Go ahead and share the link. If you're somehow listening to Twitch while you're driving your car, or roll down your window and say, hey, everybody, go support IGDA. It'll be great. They'll enjoy that quite a bit. There's more stream coming up. But until then, it's been our pleasure to serve you. That's our episode of We Have Cool Friends, everybody. Once again, thank you, of course, to the IGDA Foundation for having me come in. Thank you to everybody who was on the panel and had interesting, thought-provoking things to say. It really helped, I think, all of us understand allyship a bit more. Important conversation, so please share it with your friends. Not even for the usual, you know, like, subscribe, share. But I mean, like, share it with your friends, because everybody wants to know what they can do and if they're doing enough. And I think this is a conversation of, like, hey, this isn't a quick fix. This isn't something we can say we're doing and it's done. It's something that is ongoing. It's a learning process, and we're all going to make mistakes. So we need to keep at it. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, We Have Cool Friends is our weekly talk show where we talk to someone, a best friend, about what is going on in their life. Someone who likes Kind of Funny. Someone we just think's interesting. If you like that, of course, please feel free to tweet at me who should be on the show next week. From the Valley Folk, it is Steve Zaragoza. He'll be in here, I'm sure, to talk all about Ghostbusters with me, have a good time, talk about his rise, talk about the Valley Folk, all that. So please get your questions in, patreon.com/kindafunny. You can find the participation links that way. Go ahead, ask Steve some questions for the Friend Zone. And know that until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.